Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the Football Garbage Time podcast. I'm Hakun Wong. I'm the editor-in-chief of footballgarbagetime.com. And with me today to discuss all the hot topics from around the league in Week 4 are senior staff writers Joey Alibro and Ryan Whitfield. So I'm going to put them on the line now, and let's get rolling. Joey, you there?
Yep, I'm here, Hakun.
All right. Joey, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling great. I felt like a baby last night. My Giants got 2 wins in a row. Oh, nice.
Well, we got a lot to talk about that in a second. So hold on to the thought because we're going to come right back to you. Ryan, did you come to realize that the NFL actually does continue to keep going even when the Patriots are on bye?
You know, I actually came to more realize that it's a way worse product when the Patriots aren't playing.
Okay.
The level of play across the league yesterday is pretty disappointing for a Pats fan. So
be honest, did you watch all the games while wearing a gray hoodie a la Belichick this weekend?
I actually went to a cookout back home with my friend whose mother went to school with Bill Cowher, and his whole family are Pittsburgh Steelers fans, so I actually wore my Brady throwback with my Patriots beanie just to rub it into him a little bit. So.
right, because we know you're a good winner, so you know, we don't want to – so that's clear.
Like everyone else.
All right. Yeah, so plenty to talk about this week, and let's get rolling. Today we're going to be discussing whether the New York Giants are for real or just fool's gold, whether injured quarterbacks around the league are helping or hurting their team by playing injured, and whether firing of Miami Dolphins head coach Joe Philbin is going to turn things around in Miami or if there are bigger problems afoot. So getting started with our first topic of the day, have the New York Giants turned the corner going 2-2 after an impressive 24-10 win against the Bills at Buffalo, although there was some, it did look like they might melt down in the fourth quarter again until Tyrod Taylor threw an INT. But now they are tied for first in NFC East. Now, arguably, that's not a big deal because that's a three-way tie in a four-team division, but first is first. So is this a turning point, or is this just luck? And what does this mean to the rest of the NFC East, which is clearly having a share of problems? Joey, what do you think about that?
Well, I think they are turning the corner. It's pretty impressive. We started 0-2, you know, we're the first team in NFL history to blow 2 fourth quarter leads with being up by 10, 2 games in a row to start the season. So it's pretty demoralizing. Coughlin's coach his butt off, turned the team around, not letting them give up. We got it. I mean, we beat the Redskins last week. Not a very impressive win, I'll give you that. But the defense played great last week against Buffalo. Steve Spagnuolo working with no-name guys like Kerry Wynn, great against the run. If you saw any of the game yesterday, Uwani Yunga, 2014 undrafted free agent from BYU, leads the team in tackles. Nikita Whitlock, he's 5'11", 250 pounds, plays fullback and defensive tackle, had a sack last week against Buffalo yesterday. So this team has a bright future, especially with all the injuries in Dallas, the turmoil going on in both Washington and Philly. So.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna take the counterpoint here to you, Joey, and say that I think the Giants are getting a little bit lucky. You know, if you look at the numbers just closely, it's interesting because I think it's a little bit misleading. You look at the number of points that they have per game, and in the NFC East, they have the most points per game at 25.5. Yet they still have the second lowest yards per game at 335.8 and the second lowest rushing yards per game at 93. Now, you flip to the other side of the line, and you see that they are their defense – has allowed the second least amount of points per game at 20.5 in the NFC East, but their defense has allowed the most yards per game in NFC East at 386, and they are actually at 26 as far as defenses go in all the NFL this year. So I think that, quite frankly, you're getting a little bit lucky if you're getting to put those points up and keeping points off the board when you're allowing so many yards and you're not really getting many yards yourself. You know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the numbers with the yardage allowed, I think they're a bit blown up because of the first two games, blowing the fourth quarter lead. You know, both times was huge, just passing yards. Romo and Matt Ryan blew us up. It was really bad. I think we're 32nd in the league pass defense-wise, but I think we're top 10 against the run. Against Buffalo yesterday, Buffalo was coming in averaging 150 yards per game in the ground. We held them to 55. Granted, that was with LeSean McCoy out, but Carlos Williams was averaging 7.5 yards per carry. So...
Right. Well, I mean, we're not saying Carlos Williams is the same as LeSean McCoy, though, right? I mean, LeSean McCoy clearly makes, and not only that, but Percy Harvin was their lead receiver. Sammy Watkins, he's not a clear-cut, superstar yet, but he clearly was their best weapon there. So Tyrod Taylor was really playing with one hand tied behind his back for most of the game. Now, I'll give the Giants credit for shutting him down almost an entirety of the first half, but he did get things going at the end, and I did look like there might be another fourth-quarter meltdown there until Tyrod Taylor threw that interception in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I was panicking a bit. Eli threw that, his first interception of the season, actually, which is pretty impressive from him because, he's been known for throwing high amounts of interceptions. That one year he had 27. So he threw the first one in the fourth quarter in the red zone. I was getting a bit worried. But the defense stepped up on the goal line, stopped him on fourth and one from the red zone. And we just shut him down. I'm finally glad we can close out games. Nice change.
Right. And Ryan, do you have any thoughts about the Giants and the NFC East? You think this doesn't? I know it's not your division, it's not the Pats, but you have any thoughts on the Giants this year? They're your favorite other team from the NFC.
I think you made a good point with the luck there, but the point I think that you're missing is that the luck's not running out. They got the 49ers, Eagles, Cowboys, Saints, Buccaneers, Redskins, Dolphins, Panthers, Vikings, Eagles left. The only two hard games left on their schedule are the Patriots and the Jets, both of which are coming to, I guess, technically, the Jets is a home game for both. But, neither one of those are a road game. So the Giants have a ridiculously easy schedule this year. You look at them, I thought that maybe the game had passed Tom Coughlin by. It is unbelievable to me that he still cannot build a secondary and that he still relies on front seven playing the defensive side. But they don't have any really tough opponents coming out, so I agree with you. It's been a little bit of fool's gold for them, but they could easily finish that schedule 10-6. And inversely, you got the Cowboys who have the Pats coming off a bye week, then they're at the New York Giants, and then they're at home against Seattle. So the Giants are probably the Cowboys are probably gonna lose five straight. We already discussed our feelings on Philadelphia last week, and the Redskins we don't really have to dive into. So I think they go 10-6, and I think they win that division. And for me as a Pats fan, I know that every single time that our two divisions match up in the interleague play, the Giants wound up in the Super Bowl the last two times. So that definitely sticks in my mind a little bit, that little superstition added to it.
Right. No, that's a good point. So Joey, what are your thoughts on the rest of the NFC East? Do you think they have a chance of catching up to the Giants, or do you think that the Giants are actually going to take it this year, seeing as how they've turned the corner now, or you believe they've turned the corner now with this win against the Buffalo Bills?
I think the only team that will give them trouble for the rest of the year will be Dallas. Romo should be back by week 10. Dez will be back, they're saying, week 7 against us in New York. I don't think Philly is going to turn things around. They're 1-3. It's been bad. It's really ugly. Washington, what's going on there. Kirk Cousins at quarterback instead of RG3, and there's so much just drama, it seems like, every year with Washington. So I think it'll come down to Dallas and Giants like it does almost every year.
Right. And I know it's interesting because, last week Ryan and I discussed the Eagles, and, I looked at the numbers again, and it continued this week. I mean, the Eagles are they're just putrid. There is something wrong in Philly right now, and they just can't get anything going. I mean, their rushing yards per game is at a lowly 70 yards per game. It's really disgusting. They lost a game they should have had in hand to Washington in the final seconds. So I'm going to give a little more credit to the Redskins here. I think they have overachieved with what they have with Kirk Cousins, without any D-jacks, with Alfred Morris, Matt Jones. I think that Redskins have really overachieved. They've actually have the most yards per game of of any of those in the NFC East and have a very potent rushing attack with two very good running backs. Kirk Cousins is doing his best to manage the games. You know, the Eagles are really, I think, will be last. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if the Cowboys end up choking along the way as they normally do and that the Giants and the Redskins end up being near the top. But I can't see anybody really. I mean, if the Giants team that showed up yesterday shows up through the rest of the year, then I would have a hard time seeing the Giants not winning this division.
Yeah.
All right. So, no, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying, especially with the easy schedule that Ryan mentioned last, the only two difficult games we have left on the schedule are the Patriots and the Jets, but both those games are at home. So 10-6 is definitely realistic for this team.
Right, and actually it probably behooves the Giants to lose to the Patriots during the regular season so they can, again, upset them in the Super Bowl, right? Ryan, isn't that the way we're supposed to play this out?
I mean, that's what happened in 07, but they did come to Foxborough and beat us in 2011 and then beat us again in the Super Bowl.
Okay, well, this will be a really interesting season for the Giants. I actually had lost a little bit of faith in their ability to turn it around, but it looks like they're turning the corner now, and it looks like the consensus here is that they are going to end up winning that division and going to the playoffs. So it will be interesting to see how that turns out. But that leads us to the next question here, because there are those injured quarterbacks, and then one of the injured quarterbacks that we mentioned, that Joey mentioned, was Tony Romo of the Dallas Cowboys. And, of course, he's going to be out for quite some time, but there are other quarterbacks out there that are also injured, that are some are playing, some are not playing. And the question here and our next topic is, should injured quarterbacks like Drew Brees, like Andrew Luck, like Jay Cutler, should they be playing through injury, or are they hurting their teams not by playing under 100%? Ryan, what do you think about that?
So, yeah, I think it's, you know, a case-by-case basis here. With Luck, I wrote don't need him, and next week you're at Houston, so if he's still banged up, I'd sit him out, because there's no reason, even as weak and soft and finesse as that Colts team is, they should be able to go down and beat that mess of a team right now. Brees, I think it's stupid for him to play at this age. He needs to be worried about his future, and he doesn't want to get something that's going to kind of, you know, start to speed up the end of his career here. You're in a division with two undefeated teams, even if both those teams aren't nearly as good as their record indicates right now. I'm buying into Atlanta, actually. Carolina, their schedule's been weak. But regardless, you're not catching both those teams, and there's just too many other good teams out in the NFC right now. If the Cowboys get healthy, they should win a wild card. And then, you know, it's going to be the Cardinals or the Seahawks winning the other wild card. So not that you want to pack it in necessarily in week four, but if you're hurt, you shouldn't be pushing yourself for a team that started 0-3. And then, with all due respect, with Jay Cutler, who cares? You know, your Bears aren't going anywhere. I don't think they're any better off or worse off with him in there. So, as far as them, I guess maybe for the people who, for whatever reason, have Cutler on their fantasy team, care. But for the rest of us, not that
right.
important.
Well, so let me talk about Drew Brees first of all. And now I'm going to address your point about Jay Cutler, because I have a thought on what they're doing there. And you're right, as a Bears fan, it hurts me to say this, but it is a big who cares when it comes right down to it, as far as NFL football is concerned. But as far as the Bears organization, there might be something there. So about Drew Brees, I mean, he has a bruised rotator cuff. It's his throwing shoulder, his right shoulder. He missed week three, where Luke McCown almost won. He managed to come back in week four. He completed 33 of 41 for 359 yards and two TDs. But it's a little misleading, because in overtime he did throw a short pass to C.J. Spiller that went 80 yards for a touchdown. So if you take that out, really in regulation he was actually 279 and a TD. Now, what was interesting to me about Drew Brees is I don't really get why he came back either. And I totally agree with what you said there. I mean, they're not going to catch Atlanta. I think Atlanta's for real. Their defense could probably use a little bit of a bump, but, you know, their offense is for real. Devontae Freeman is for real. Clearly, Julio Jones is for real. Leonard Hankerson looks like he's for real now. So there are a lot of options there in Atlanta. They are going to be a high-flying, high-octane team. They're going to score a lot of points. The Saints aren't catching up. Right. That's a good point. They're going to get Tevin Coleman back, and you're adding a good back to a good back. I mean, they're really going to be unstoppable. Now, you look at the Saints, they got really nothing. I mean, they really only have – I mean, the big news that came out of that was Willie Snead, somebody who actually might not have even made the 53-man roster, was their big pass catcher yesterday. And, you know, honestly, they traded away Jimmy Graham. They don't really have any other options. Brandon Cooks was totally shut down. You know, Mark Ingram does look pretty good, but he's not going to carry the team. They don't really have anything. It looks like they already entered the rebuilding phase, and pushing Drew Brees back in there with an injury like that. I mean, a rotator cuff injury on his throwing shoulder, I don't get it. I don't really understand what's happening there. And honestly, what I'm seeing is that he is actually throwing much shorter passes. He's not going downfield. Part of that is his receiving options not getting open. Part of it is just he doesn't have the arm strength with a bruised rotator cuff to go downfield. If you look at his career average, as far as yards per attempt, it's at 7.52. It's a little bit higher if you look at his time in New Orleans, around closer to 7.7. Last night, if you take out that 80-yard catch and run by C.J. Spiller, his yards per attempt were down around 6.7, 6.8. You know, it's almost a full yard less. It's clear to me that he's going with short passes. That's going to make defenses come in quickly. It's going to be a problem for him. And if he hits that shoulder and actually tears that rotator cuff, he'll be out for the entire season. He may not make it back to the NFL at all. So I totally agree with that. With Jay Cutler, I really do think that the problem is that the Bears are in sell mode. They're in fire sale mode. They've been talk about them trying to sell Matt Forte. Jimmy Clausen makes everyone look terrible, and they needed Jay Cutler back in there in order to actually make a move. I mean, I would have thought the Bears were going to be decent with what they had, Alshon Jeffrey, Kevin White, Martellus Bennett, and Matt Forte. And Jay Cutler is a professional NFL quarterback, but, you know, at the end of the day, Jimmy Clausen doesn't qualify as a professional NFL quarterback. And at the end of the day, if you're trying to trade Matt Forte, you have much less trade value if you're on a really crappy team, I should say, with very low yards per reception, very low rushing yards, and just not winning games and not putting points on the board. So I think that's what's behind Cutler. And they don't care about Cutler. He's not the future. I mean, they overpaid for him. If he gets injured and he doesn't play again for the next year and a half, they don't care. So I really do think that's what's going on in Chicago. I don't think they intend to compete against the Packers, who basically have a stranglehold on the NFC North. So, Joey, any thoughts about the quarterbacks that have played injured? You know, should they be playing injured? Are they helping their teams? Are they hurting their teams?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Ryan. I think it should be taken like week by week basis based on who you're playing. Doesn't make any sense for a guy like Drew Brees to be out there. Your team's 0-3. You're not catching Atlanta. You're not catching Carolina. You know, rotator cuff injury, like you said, that could end his career. You know, a guy like Andrew Luck, you played Jacksonville this week, and then you got Thursday night, you got Houston, who looked absolutely awful against Atlanta. Cutler, I think you're right on with it. It's about morale for the team because Clausen's in there. They've already given up hope of even having a chance to win the game. You put Cutler in there, maybe it goes up a little, but you said with the trade value and everything with Forte and all those guys. So, yeah, I definitely agree.
Mm-hmm. And I think that when you talk about Andrew Luck, you know, I'll chime in there and say that, you know, Matt Hasselbeck is not a bad quarterback. I mean, he can manage a game fine. He's a little bit on the older side, but he did a fine job managing mm-hmm. the Colts against a very underrated Jacksonville Jaguars. And, of course, it took several missed field goals by the Jaguars before he was able to win it in OT, but, you know, Luck makes sense to me. The Colts needed the win, but Andrew Luck is the future of that franchise. I mean, they can't risk him. They don't have another option. They're building around Andrew Luck. He gets any worse, and it's a real problem. Now, I heard he's back in practice today, lobbing balls around, handing balls off. I suspect they're going to keep him out again this week on a short week, but I think that makes sense. I think you can't think of the here and now. The Colts know that better than anybody. The year that they let Peyton Manning on the bench, and that they let Peyton Manning go and invested in Andrew Luck and proceeded to be just okay. I think they know how to wait. They know how to wait for their time. They know that it's coming with Andrew Luck at the helm, so that they can't risk him. They can't take any risks with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I definitely agree.
All right. So, moving right along to our last topic of the day. After a 1-3 start, the Miami Dolphins have fired head coach Joe Philbin and replaced him, at least for the rest of this season, with tight end coach Dan Campbell. So Joe Philbin will leave the Dolphins with a 24-28 record after taking over in 2012. Owner Stephen Ross said it was a tough move moving on from Philbin because he likes the guy and he's working so hard, yada, yada, yada. But he thinks that they still have a chance at the playoffs and a change at the head coach position was necessary in order to get there. So does this firing address their problems or are there bigger issues in Miami? Ryan, do you have any thoughts on that?
So I have three thoughts, and I know we're down to the last 10 here, so I'll try to make them quick and succinct. But first of all, they have absolutely zero shot. That team is – this is the same thing we talked about with the Eagles last week. This is a team that is poorly constructed. They have no identity. They just throw money around. It's the same thing they did a couple years ago, bringing in Mike Wallace. I still don't get it, and, you know, we got Eli Manning over there, but maybe you can shed some light on this for me out there in Chicago. But the rest of the league is so stupid. It drives me crazy. It is a passing league. You do not pay a defensive tackle that kind of money. Everyone to the Patriots this year were insane for letting Vince Wilfork go, and we haven't missed him because he's a defensive tackle at this day. It's the same reason you don't overpay an offensive guard and you don't put a number one pick on a running back. Trent Richardson, you know, case in point. I've been predicting this since the beginning. You can reference back to on our site my article on the AFC East where I said the Dolphins were the worst team in the AFC East. They had the most pub, and they were the worst-built team in that division. And people slept on the Jets when the Jets quietly went out and built a great team. You know, and just some of the moves, you know, people just get so caught up in the fantasy numbers, and people get so caught up in – you know, the big plays. And people forget that Kenny Stills was a system wide receiver. Kenny Stills is not that good of a receiver. He was just good when he played with Drew Brees. And so the Dolphins go and spend money on him. You know, the only player there on that offense that I think is worth a dime is Jarvis Landry. I think Lamar Miller's overrated. I think that entire team is built with a bunch of overrated guys. And you know, one of the bigger things that they might have messed up on the defense is, you know, they have Brent Grimes, and as much as I hate him because he's a little puke, Corlin Finnegan was a nice number two. And so you lose somebody like that, and now that defense, they're just not as good on the back end anymore. So I don't think they have any shot. I think I said 9-7 going into this year. That team's going to be a 5-win team, and they're going to be at the bottom of the AFC East, arguably one of the worst divisions in football.
Yeah, I totally agree. It is going to be a bad division. I do think, though, I also agree that the Dolphins are not going to win that division. You know, quite frankly, the problems with the Dolphins are from top to bottom. I totally agree with that. Their defense, their offense, everything there is just dysfunctional. I mean, the Dolphins were outscored 91-48 in the last three games. That's not just a coaching problem. That's a player problem as well. That's a scheme problem, but it's also a player problem. You know, Philbin was with the Dolphins for just over three seasons. He's never had a single winning season. They've had a lot of late season collapses as well, so it's not entirely like he was consistently bad through the entire tenure, but it's tough in Miami. I mean, there's a lot of expectations, and they are too high, and the patience in Miami is too low. There's no coach since the legendary Don Shula that's completed more than four full seasons in Miami. I mean, that has to tell you something. He hasn't been there for a while. So Miami doesn't have a lot of patience, and their expectations are high. They want to win now. You know, Campbell comes in, says he wants tougher, more intense practices. I don't get that. I don't think that's going to make a difference. I think it's going to be a change in the way they construct their roster. I totally agree with that. I totally agree with the fact that Kenny Stills is not the guy. I think that they overpaid for a number of players, and Dominican Sue is case in point. And I have to pick a little bit of a bone here with Ryan Tannehill. Now, I like Ryan Tannehill as a football player, but he is obviously not a good team player. According to multiple reports, there was a lot of fighting between Ryan Tannehill and the team's defense in the team's walkthrough in London on Saturday. You just can't have that. Apparently, he even told the scout team after they intercepted him, you know, he said, quote, "Enjoy your practice squad paychecks." I mean, hold on a second here, Tannehill. This is a practice scout. This is a scout team intercepting you. You should be saying, well, what am I doing wrong? Not, don't intercept me. I mean, does he want him to drop the ball? Does he want him to not play well to make him feel better? I mean, quite frankly, Tannehill has completed. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just jumping on that, on the Tannehill point, I mean, it's the problem with the NFL. It's the reason why the polarity in the league is gone now, because they've made it such an offensive league that you can't compete without a quarterback. That's why you have six undefeated teams or seven undefeated teams right now, and you have so many bad teams because you can't compete without a quarterback. So it's becoming like the NBA in the sense that the worst place to be is the middle. The Dolphins,
right.
The Tannehill's not going to get it done. The only option the Dolphins have are to rebuild and, you know, suck for luck. You know, whoever the next one up is, whoever you identify as the next guy, you have to go to the you have to go to the basement to get your, you know, get your star franchise quarterback, or you're done in this league.
Yeah, but they've already overpaid for Tannehill, and they already locked him in, and they gave him a huge contract in the offseason, and I don't know what they're paying for. I know there's no other better options out there, but quite frankly, you look at where he is right now. He has a passer rating of 77.1, which is good for 30th among NFL starting quarterbacks. 30th. So that's pretty low. And those among those with higher passer ratings, Josh McCown, Brian Hoyer, and Brandon Whedon. Now, McCown and Hoyer have been replaced at various times throughout the season, and Whedon is a backup in Dallas. So, quite frankly, they're overpaid for Tannehill, but now they're committed to him, and until they get Tannehill out of their system, I think they're going to have problems. I think that's going to be a big problem. So, Joey, any thoughts about the Dolphins? You think that getting rid of Joe Philbin is going to make a difference? You think that they have a shot at getting to the top of their division, or do you think this is just the end of the line for them and this is just a little bit of desperation?
I think there's definitely there's deeper-rooted issues than Joe Philbin. Remember coaches like and general managers Nick Saban, Randy Mueller, Cam Cameron, Jeff Ireland, Tony Soprano. They were there. I don't think the Dolphins have ever properly rebuilt. Ryan, Belichick and Brady and Kraft are a perfect trio. And in New York here, we have Jerry Reese and Mara and Coughlin and Eli. It's just, it all works. Dolphins have never properly rebuilt their team. They pick general managers who select the coaches, and then the coaches end up outlasting the general managers who then, they're the successors of the general managers, fire the coaches. So it's just like a never-ending cycle with this team.
Right. Now, I totally agree with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, they have no shot.
I totally agree with that, Joey. I think that we're all of a consensus here that the Dolphins have bigger problems here. It's bigger problems on both sides of the ball, bigger problems in roster construction. It's bigger problems because they just don't have the system like, dare I say, the Patriots do, or dare I say, the Giants do, to create a winning football solution. They just don't have that in place. Mm-hmm. I also think they're just not patient enough, and their expectations are way too high. They don't know how to play the part of the Colts, sit by and rebuild. I think that's a problem.
Yeah, that was the Colts' mistake this year, actually, in free agency, going out and get older veteran guys, overpaying them for Andre Johnson and Frank Gore, those types, and that didn't really work out like the first two games of the season. I mean, Colts have been struggling all season. They got an overtime win against Jacksonville and a really, really close game against Tennessee 2 weeks ago. So, I mean, the Colts, they were patient when they got Luck, but they followed the model of the Dolphins, and it hasn't worked out pretty well this season, so...
Yeah, definitely.
All right. I totally get that. And that's the final horn on our show today. So thank you, Ryan, Joey, for being on the show. Joey, you want to give us your Twitter handle so people can follow you?
I'm at Joey Libro, so follow me.
All right. And Ryan, remind everybody of your Twitter handle so they can follow you.
Yep, at Ryan Whitfield, N-E.
All right, great. And remember to follow Football Garbage Time at FB Garbage Time. We will see you again next week when we talk more about all the issues across the NFL. And until next time, enjoy the rest of the NFL games.